This podcast was recorded Thursday, October 3rd at 9:30 a.m. Things might have changed by the time you hear this.
Yeah, like I'll finally figure out how to say quid pro quo. My mouth was not built for that.
Is that Latin? Must be Latin.
I don't know. Let's talk politics.
This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at the Snollygosters, those shrewd politicians who make the rules we must all live by. I'm Mike Thompson.
And I'm Steve Brown. Coming up in the podcast, supporters of the nuclear plant bailout are giving out special petition signature erasers, another unusual move to keep a repeal off next fall's ballot.
But first, another political fight is smoldering, or should we say vaporizing, at the State House.
State officials, including Governor Mike DeWine, are making an all-out effort to fight the use of e-cigarettes, especially by young people. Vaping is on the rise among teenagers. State officials say high school students' use of e-cigarettes has increased 135% in the past 3 years.
DeWine says vaping is undoing all of the work the state has done to get kids to stop smoking.
Since 2011, we have seen a 63% decrease in high school cigarette use. But that progress is today being gutted by new efforts to get kids hooked on vaping.
Add to that some vaping-related illnesses and deaths in recent months, and the anti-vaping movement rapidly has gained strength.
DeWine wants the state to ban flavored e-cigarettes, which he says hook teenagers on vaping, but the vapors are not going quietly.
That is the sound of dozens of e-cigarette supporters and shop owners rallying outside the State House this week, carrying signs that read things like, "We vape, we vote, tastes great, less killing, and mango is not a crime."
Gotta love those. That's some of the best
mango
signs.
Mango is not a crime is great.
Those are some of the best signs you've seen in a while. Seriously, though, they argue vaping is safe and helps people quit smoking. And joining us on Snollygoster is the president of the Ohio Vapor Trade Association, James Jarvis. James, welcome to Snollygoster.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
First question. We did not realize that Ohio had a vapor trade association. How long have you guys been in existence?
So we're going on 6 years here in the state of Ohio.
How did you come together? Was there for political purposes, or what was it?
So back in 2013, a couple of businesses got together and decided that we needed to have some kind of framework to work towards a responsible industry, one that would not market to kids, one that would prevent youth access for our products, and one that wanted to make the industry better for the long term.
You say not market to kids. The main argument that government and health officials are making is that flavored products like mango, referenced in that sign, right, that these products are aimed at attracting younger customers. You say you're not marketing to younger people. What do you say to the argument that these flavors attract younger people?
You know, the kids are going to try anything they can get their hands on once, if it's new, for the first and foremost thing. We do know that companies like Juul, who have very heavily concentrated nicotine liquids, upwards of 50 milligrams, even when they took their flavored products off the market over a year ago, the results of this new survey out still shows that the highest used product is that product, and the flavors aren't available. So they've went to what they've left on the market. The teenagers that are getting their hands on these illegally are not using it for the flavor. They're using it for the massive nicotine amount for the head buzz that's in these products.
Do you know the breakdown of the folks who use vaping or e-cigarettes? Is like how many, what percentage is under 25, what percentage is, say, over 30? Do you have a breakdown of that?
I don't, but I do know from the vape business perspective, so our adult customers, the ones that are legally allowed to purchase, some areas 18 and above, some areas 21 and above, around 90% of our adult consumers use flavored products to stop smoking. That includes flavors that are maybe resemble a fruity cereal, maybe resemble a mango, a peach, a strawberry. This is what they use because, one, if they enjoy it, they're going to continue to use it and work themselves down in nicotine strength all the way to get to zero to get off of the product, which is our goal. If they don't like it, the only thing they have left is tobacco. Nobody wants to have anything remotely that tastes like tobacco, because that's not going to encourage them to get off the products. So they're not going to enjoy what they're using. They're going to put it down. They're going to get frustrated, go back to smoking something that is available on every street corner that kills 480,000 people a year. And it's cheaper, and they're just familiar with it. So that's the fear that's going to happen if this flavor ban thing happens.
Is the goal of vape shops to get people to stop using nicotine? That seems counterintuitive, right? You're making money off them using nicotine. I mean, people who sell beer for a living want people to buy more beer. It's the way the industry works, right? So you want people to buy more vape products.
I want people to get off of combustible cigarettes. That's my goal. Every time I've testified at the State House, I've said this sentence, whether I've been meeting with reps or I've been in a testimony. We have the worst business plan in the world. We don't sell to people who don't smoke or vape. We don't sell to people who are underage or not allowed to purchase, and we want to lose customers through success. As a business model for profitability, worst thing you could ever do. But for the sentimental and for the right reason, it's the most rewarding industry I've ever had a chance to be a part of.
Have you ever smoked yourself?
I was never a smoker, which is ironic.
Do you vape at all?
I don't. 95% of the vape shop owners like me got into this industry because they were successful at quitting smoking by using vapor products, right? Mm. They're success stories. Myself, I lost my grandmother at the age of 16 to lung cancer. I was with her about every weekend growing up. So when I had to sit there and watch her suffocate at her bedside, take her last breath, that deeply affected me. And so in 2008, when I was afforded this opportunity to get into the industry by a very good friend of mine who was able to use this product to get off of smoking, it lit a fire in me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we just went store by store and trying to set up accounts and put these very basic first-generation vapor products into these stores. And, you know, 5 years later, he opened up one of the first vape shops in the state of Ohio. And I was very fortunate about a year later to get the same opportunity here in Columbus. And now we have 23 locations in the state of Ohio. I have five, and he has like 13, and like an aunt and his brother own a couple here and there. But it's pretty much family.
Now, high school teachers, folks who work in education, health officials say, yes, well, even though state law recently changed, so tobacco products, including e-cigarettes, are illegal to sell to folks under 21, they say kids are vaping like crazy. The vaping is everywhere. It's hard to control because the devices are so small. They can have them in the crook of their hand. You can't even see it in the back of the classroom. They say everybody is vaping. Why is that? And how are they getting the e-cigarettes? And what can we do to reduce that number?
So I can answer that question pretty simple. You really need to look no further than the internet. If you want to really nip this in the bud, let's look at the internet first off. Anybody with a credit card or a debit card or one of those prepaid cards you buy from your big box retail store, they can take that, go on the internet, go to whatever website that they find when they search, you know, vapor product.
Buyvapes.com or whatever.
Whatever it is, right? Yeah. And there's a little box on a pop-up. Are you 18 or over? Are you 21 and over? You click yes. That's the end of the verification. Ships right to the front door. I can tell you in the state of Ohio, year to date, there's been 177 failed inspections from the FDA for people selling to minors. Of those 177 fails, three from the brick-and-mortar vape industry. One of them was the same store that failed twice. So basically, we had two stores that had failed out of those 177.
When you say failed, they got caught. They got caught selling to the minors. So what do you do as a store owner to keep kids from buying e-cigarettes?
So what we have adopted in OHVTA is this policy.
That's the Ohio Vapor Trade Association.
Yes. We have adopted a policy where you come in the front door, you get ID'd. If you're not old enough to be in the store, sorry, you can't come in. If you are old enough, because just by visual verification, looking at the picture, looking at the birth date, we let them in, we look around, we walk around with them, talk about what they want. You know, what are you trying to get out of this? Are you kind of on the fence about this industry? You know, what are you looking to do? Are you committed 100%? Because that's going to tell me which way to take the experience with them. If it's something that they're not really sure of, I'm not going to try to push them to spend a bunch of money because that's not what we do. We want to get them something that's going to work and satisfy their nicotine craving to start their journey to get all the way off, right?
What's the solution to what public health officials call a health crisis, to what Governor DeWine calls a health crisis, an epidemic? What's the solution? Is it just cracking down on internet sales, and how do you do that, or is it something else?
You know, that's kind of what we need the opportunity to sit down and work with them and figure out a workable solution that will not eliminate the most successful product to help adults get off of cigarettes. And that's flavored vapor products. Like I said before, 90% of our adult consumers are using flavors to get off of smoking. If we turn our backs on those adults, they're going to go back to smoking that kills 480,000 people a year, or they're going to go to the black market, which we know what happens when people go to black market. We're seeing it now in the media, you know, all over the place. The black market THC cartridges that are being cut with this product called Honeycut or vitamin E acetate is becoming more and more popular and really is becoming the leading cause of what's going on with these lung issues, according to the CDC. I mean, we even know through ODH in that conference call, or the conference they had the other day, The head of the ODH said it was 90% of the cases in the state of Ohio have been related to THC.
ODH is the Ohio Department of Health. Back first on the flavors, then we'll get to the safety of vaping in a moment. But why do you need flavors? If the goal is to get folks eventually off of all of this, why do you need the flavors to attract them? Because that's what the critics say. It's like the Joe Camel cigarette ads back in the 80s and the 90s, that those were the hook for kids. They claim that the flavors bring the kids in. So why do you need the flavors?
Well, like I said earlier, 90% of the adult consumers choose flavors. Mm-hmm. If they don't like the taste of tobacco liquid or don't want anything that remotely tastes like a cigarette, you know, This is their only option. This is the option.
Only palatable choice.
Exactly. If they don't like the tobacco flavor, they're going to go back to smoking cigarettes because they're familiar with it. Mm-hmm. And it's cheaper now because of the tax that went into effect on the 1st for vapor products. And it's on every street corner. They don't have to go 5 miles away to their local vape shop. They can just pop into the street corner and grab a cigarette.
I'm only half facetiously asking this question. How about adult flavors like asparagus or Brussels sprouts or onion?
I think you've answered your own question there.
Well, I mean, because mango and fruity strawberry, that definitely is going to be, you know, they're sweeter. So that's going to attract kids.
Well, we were talking about when I first came in here, you asked me what I had for breakfast. And we talked about Fruit Loops, right?
Yeah.
Sorry, I still like Fruit Loops. In my truck, you'll find a bag of gummy bears right now if you walk out there.
Okay.
You've lobbed some bombs at the tobacco industry, right, about how dangerous cigarettes are. You also talk about these THC cartridges that contain vitamin E. Is it your contention that vaping basic nicotine, that basic vaping, the things you sell, is safe?
So nothing you put foreign into your body is ever going to be 100% safe, and we know that, and we will readily admit that. But what we do know from research in the UK, which has been doing research for quite a while, this is the same group of folks called the Royal College of Physicians. Back in the 60s, they came out and said that smoking cigarettes will cause cancer. And it took the U.S. 4 to 5 years to come up and realize that this is what was going on, right? So in 2016, they came out with a study called Nicotine Without Smoke. This is, again, the same group, the Royal College of Physicians, 35,000 doctors. And, you know, their whole kind of review of this whole study said that vaping is at least 95% less harmful than combustible cigarettes. So if you need your nicotine, are you going to go with something that we know kills 485,000 people a year, or are you going to go with an option that is at least 95% less harmful? Just get your nicotine. And that's kind of where we're at with it. I'm going to look at both sides of that, and I'm going to take my option that I know is going to be way less harmful.
But still harmful.
But yeah, the 5% of the people that they had surveyed, you know, felt that this was from their study.
But we're still early in this industry, I mean, relatively speaking. And I think that the bottom line is that we have been down this road before. We fear that we're going down the same road we went down before. Back when smoking became very popular, it was touted sometimes as being healthy. Certainly it was touted in advertising as being a harmless habit. And then decades later, we see all these folks like your grandmother, like my grandmother, who were addicted to smoking and paid the consequences. Tobacco companies had to spend billions of dollars in settlements. It has devastated a generation of folks who were addicted to three generations of folks addicted to smoking. Are we going down the same path? That's the question people have. Are we going down the same path with vaping that we did with cigarettes?
We are not big tobacco. I want to make that perfectly clear to anybody that's listening to this podcast. This industry didn't start by the ivory towers down in Salem, North Carolina. This started in a consumer's kitchen, right? They were making their own liquid and using this device that was brought to the market in 2007, thanks to a gentleman named Han Luke, right? They have created, this is the consumer-created solution to the tobacco epidemic, is what this industry is. And we have found that because we started this industry, we have shown that this product works. We have made flavors that adults absolutely love. And it worked to get them off combustible cigarettes. We are not tobacco. If you look at what's going on in the market, the companies that are really being associated with the vape, with the youth issue, are all big tobacco related. Altria owns 30% of Juul.
Yeah.
Vuse, they're owned by big tobacco. It's very frustrating as a independent business owner and somebody that blazed a trail, if you will, in this industry by creating something.
I love the pun.
Right. That has created something out of nothing.
Mm-hmm.
to stop something that is tearing families apart for the last 60 years, something that is killing almost 500,000 Americans a year. We have been able to convert 13.5 million smokers because we had the passion. And it wasn't always about making money for us. It was about changing lives. And that's what we do. That's what this association is about.
I don't think we're going to settle the argument about safety. The FDA certainly disagrees that vaping is safe. I know you. The industry wants to blame a lot of this on illicit cartridges. You're planning to meet with Governor DeWine regarding legislation, or what exactly do you hope to convey to him in your meetings about vaping, about the industry?
So we're going to meet with his office and the Ohio Department of Health together on Monday just to talk about the industry, you know, from our viewpoint. And maybe we can come up with some ideas to tackle this youth issue together. Maybe it's looking at the total nicotine percentage or concentrate in these liquids. Maybe we, you know, make a recommendation there. Maybe it's something along the lines of putting other industry in Ohio using the same ID process that we do by verification at the front door and a third-party ID scan at the register. That was one thing we didn't get to talk about. Mm-hmm. That's why we've only had 2 stores fail in the state of Ohio this year, and we've had 5 in the last 2 years. We take the IDing serious, and we want to make sure that we are putting our best foot forward. So that's going to be a part of the conversation, you know. Hey, look, we agree with you. Nobody wants youth using this product. Mm-hmm. We didn't create it to attract another generation of users. We created this to help adults off of an adult problem, you know, in the adult world. This is not why we're not here for the youth. We're here for the adults, and we need to make sure that we are there to protect them and protect these flavors, because that is what has been the most successful piece of this whole thing.
James Jarvis, the president of the Ohio Vapor Trade Association, thanks for joining Snollygoster. We'll be right back.
How do you turn what you love into a career? On season 2 of the Rivet podcast from WOSU, hear firsthand from students translating their interests into jobs without college. Listen to This American Graduate Project as we highlight the next generation of workers in the state's top industries of agriculture, insurance, and healthcare. Support for the Rivet podcast series comes from COSI. Subscribe now at wosu.org/rivet, on the WOSU mobile app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly trek through Ohio politics. Also this week, the supporters of Ohio's new nuclear power plant bailout law going all out trying to keep a repeal off the ballot.
Another week, another bold tactic. First, supporters of the $150 million a year ratepayer bailout ran ads saying the Chinese are coming to take over Ohio's energy grid. Then they hired blockers to shadow petition gatherers in an attempt to convince people not to sign. Now, a group linked to the owner of the nuke plants is running Facebook ads and has a website that tells people who have already signed the petition how they can remove their names from the petition.
It just gets better and better, doesn't it? State law actually allows for it, and the group, very helpfully, provides a fill-in-the-blank template for petition signers to complete and then send to election officials. This campaign, as we have said recently here on Snollygoster, is unprecedented. Millions and millions of dollars being spent on both sides. And Attorney General Dave Yost wants everyone, especially those trying to keep the repeal off the ballot, to behave.
People that oppose this referendum have a First Amendment right to oppose it and to speak out, but that right ends where intimidation and coercion begin.
So Dave Yost weighing in. Things must be getting bad, right?
Well, it's just...
it's rough out there.
I mean, I've never heard of this before. If you sign the petition, you can take your name off. They claim that, of course, the supporters of the bailout, opponents of the repeal, say that the petition is misleading, and they're saying you've signed a misleading petition. And how many people are actually going to go to the website, download this form, fill it out, send it to the Secretary of State's office? It smacks of desperate measures to keep this off the ballot. They must be really worried.
I think it literally is desperate measures, not that they're – I mean, they're literally worried about these plants closing. At least that's according to Carlo Leparo, who speaks for Ohioans for Energy Security, the group backing those Chinese TV ads, anti-Chinese ads you've probably seen. They literally are desperate to keep this off the ballot because they think, as you reported last week, that if it's on the ballot – that's a death knell for these plants.
Could lose their financing.
Yeah. Investors could get scared, and understandably.
The other side is also outrunning an ad, and their ad is less misleading than the Chinese are coming ads. But they also say that this bailout effort, the effort to stop the repeal, it's hard to keep it all straight. The effort to keep the thing off the ballot is funded by Wall Street interests. When in all likelihood,
just about everything is funded by
the
Wall
other
Street
side
these days.
Is funded by Wall Street interests, because there are natural gas providers who want this repeal on the ballot, who want these nuclear plants to shut down. So they're funded by Wall Street. So both sides are playing the game, one side perhaps a little more than the other.
Either way, it is an unprecedented campaign. We'll continue to watch it here on Snollygoster.
Two more weeks, Steve. Two more weeks. That's the deadline.
No, well,
October 21st is the deadline that this group has to the group that wants the repeal. That's the group. That's the deadline for them to get on the ballot. And then if they don't make it, I think there is another window where they can continue to collect signatures if they don't make it. So basically, October 21st. We'll know what's going on.
Speaking of misleading politics, time now for our Snollygoster of the Week Award. We hand that out to the shrewdest politician or political move. This week, this one actually left over from last week. Adam Schiff, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, opened last week's questioning of the acting director of National Intelligence by reading from the very infamous now transcript of the conversation between President Trump and the Ukrainian president. The transcript, damning enough, but Schiff decided to take some, shall we call, dramatic license and add a little bit of flair to it.
Shorn of its rambling character and in not so many words, this is the essence of what the president communicates. We've been very good to your country, very good. No other country has done as much as we have. But you know what? I don't see much reciprocity here. I hear what you want. I have a favor I want from you, though. And I'm going to say this only 7 times, so you better listen good. I want you to make up dirt on my political opponent, understand lots of it. On this and on that, I'm going to put you in touch with people, not just any people. I'm going to put you in touch with Attorney General of the United States, my Attorney General, Bill Barr. He's got the whole weight of the American law.
47 years ago.
Now this week, that embellishment has become a Republican talking point. President Trump called for Schiff to resign for making stuff up. Well, you know what? He did make stuff up.
He did make stuff up. He did say at the end that he made it up. He said that this was the basic context, I think is how he worded it. Something along those lines. Obviously, he was channeling his, I don't know, his inner Shakespeare there. I don't know what he was doing.
He didn't need to do it. The transcript, I know it's been read different ways by, depending on which party, which person you believe in. But it's pretty plain and pretty damning if you read it the way most people read it, that there was some kind of wink, wink, nod, nod, you know, help us. At the very least, Trump was asking for another country's help to investigate a political opponent. That was in the transcript. Adam Schiff did not have to embellish it. And by doing so, he has given his opponents ammunition and he has eroded his claim and the Democrats' claim that this is not about politics, this is about protecting the Constitution. When you pull a political stunt like that, that erodes that argument.
I mean, they can still make that argument.
He's
just up there acting like Nathaniel Hawthorne thinks he's just, I mean,
didn't whatever. Need to happen.
It didn't need to happen.
But so, it was a Snollygoster.
Hey, he made the radio. He made TV. Say what you want. Yep. His name's in lights this week. Adam Schiff, you are Snollygoster of the Week. If you have a suggestion for next week, you can email that to snollygoster@wosu.org. As always, be sure to leave us a good review on iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts. Also, tell your friends about us. Word of mouth always helps. Until next week, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.